From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 24th day of January 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's from Stuart Peterson. We'll check in on the agricultural cash grain market with Pete Peterson at the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. Get an update of the agricultural news for the afternoon. BOTUS might be back. We'll hear more about the waters of the U.S. rule from Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa. And we'll talk about the weather forecast, too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And we'll do that right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. Hey, Jackie, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, well, you are welcome. I always enjoy it.
let's start, I suppose, because things have been rallying, and there are many reasons behind it, but let's see where we are on resistance and support and kinds of places that farmers ought to be thinking about.
Well, you know, when you look at corn, of course, resistance still remains at that 358, the 100-day moving average. Haven't been above it since August 10th of 17, and basically support 349. When you look at beans, we have resistance now at 997 and three quarters because we broke through the 100-day moving average, and we hadn't closed above that since December 14th. The 200-day moving average is support at 980, but I think the bigger thing, Todd, more than even caring about the resistance, is that with today's actions and the good move that we had up, our listeners, if they haven't locked in their basis, should be looking to see what basis did. If it widened on the move higher, that's a big statement on the fact that they don't really need the beans. And so in their individual areas, they really need to check to see what basis did today.
And what do they do if it has widened? Anything or nothing?
Well, I think that, you know, we've been trying to get guys to basically do some negotiating on basis at the moment, you know, because Brazil's harvest is still behind, and that has given us some opportunities. I think the other thing that's helping us today is the U.S. dollar and the fact that the dollar basically dropped down into that 89 area. You know, in January of 17, it hit a high of 103.8. And so this 89 is just above the 200-month moving average, which is at 88.28. So, you know, last time we were in this area was December of 14 is what it was. And so I believe that that has given us some push higher. And another reason to check basis, I think, you know, if you can get a decent basis, in some areas, that's as bad as 65 under. But in other areas, you know, if it's improved at all, I think you have to really consider doing something on the basis, whether you lock it in and try and get some more, squeeze some more out of those futures. It would be a great thing. I have a technical I like to use that says that there is a possibility of 10-14, but I don't want people jumping up and down and saying, well, she said to wait till 10-14. That's not what I'm saying, okay? I'm just saying there's a outside chance that we could get there, all right? And so, but now if, you know, tomorrow we suddenly have a bump up in the dollar, then I think we're in a different situation again, you know, and we may lose a lot of what we gained today.
Yeah, speaking of the dollar, or at least as it's related to exports, USDA making an announcement this morning. At first, I think they said it was soybeans, and then they changed, or corn, and then they changed it to soybeans. And what do the export sales like this look like?
The thing is, the export sales are delayed till Friday this week, and it's because of the government shutdown. So we only lost one day at least. You know, we didn't lose like the last time when they were shut down so much longer. But they did announce that they sold meal to the Philippines and 125 million metric tons of beans to unknown, which is usually China. You know, and so you know, one of the things I think that we have to be very careful of, and I hear this all the time, is, you know, export inspections are what's most important because that's what the USDA number is basically based off of. You can have much higher sales, and if you don't deliver them, they just get rolled into the next year or they get canceled. And I constantly am hearing, oh, but we had such a big year last year. That's why we're behind this year. Well, if you looked at the weekly just this week. For the current year, corn is at 25.9%, and the five-year average is 30.1. That's a five-year average. That's not last year's. That's a five-year average. So we are definitely behind. Beans are 54.9. Their five-year average is 64. Wheat's 58.3. Their five-year average is 61.6. So I really think it's important that listeners are careful not to get too wound up in this whole thing when people keep saying, oh, last year was just such a big year. We're behind the five-year average. That's not a great thing.
Informa came out with some numbers earlier this week looking at acreage. What'd you think of those?
I thought it was pretty interesting, and I guess I don't often agree with Informa, but in this particular case, I thought that they were perhaps justified. You know, they lowered both the corn and the bean acreage plantings. They went to 89.2 million on corn compared to 90.2 for last year. Beans are actually a little higher than last year, but they lowered them from their last projection at 91.2. 90.1 is where we were last year. And basically, when you look at the fact that we've had these higher cotton prices, you know, it might actually take some acres away from corn and beans. You know, cotton futures and DEES are up $10, and they were almost at 76 since June. It's huge. And when you look at last year's federal crop insurance number, that was 68 cents. So I think that the potential is there. You know, cotton farmers are pretty good at locking in if they get above that federal crop insurance. So it's very likely that we could lose some acres over to beans. But I don't think we'll necessarily off of beans, because cotton is a direct, all their herbicides and everything are the same as what you use for beans. So I believe it would probably be bean acres and maybe some corn acres. But we'll see as we move along.
Hey, I want to talk about South America, but before we get there, you mentioned the export market. We talked some about that. Ethanol and feed as well. And there is a cattle on feed report this week, too. What do you think of all those?
Well, I think it's interesting. We had ethanol production at a four-week high. That's encouraging, of course. And when you look at the cattle on feed, you know, the average guess right now for on feed as January 1st, 107.7% of last year, or 11.4 million head. Placements average is 96.6. That would be 1.7 million head. And marketings, 98.8. And that would be 1.7 million. Now, you know, if those numbers do come in, they're very strong. There's no question about that. I'd like to see the marketing at 100, but seldom do we actually get there. This is a pretty darn good number. But all it really says, Todd, is that we have usage for corn right here in the U.S., and it continues to grow. And so that's a good thing.
What do we know about the harvest in Brazil so far?
Well, we know it's pretty slow. I mean, you know, it's been running about 10 to 14 days behind what it normally would be. They're about 1% harvested right now compared to 2.2 last year, and yet their five-year average is 1.2%. So it isn't that they're horrendously behind. There's an interesting phenomena going on down there. In parts of Paraná, the soybean plants are actually aborting healthy pods. The ground is pretty covered, and agronomists they're not certain why. They're speculating that the heavy rains, they had 8 inches in some areas, is just robbing the plant of oxygen. So if you want to see some pictures of it, you can go to my Twitter account at jvakes. I put some pictures out yesterday. Paraná is also having some they've got 50% of all of the bean rust that's been reported in Brazil, 91 cases, and that definitely is due to rain, but they're also having really problems fighting white mold, anthracnose, white flies, stink bugs, worms, mites, you know, all those good things that go along with humidity and warmth. And the other interesting thing that's going on down there is Maggi is resigning, and he's going to run for the Senate. A lot of people actually thought that he was going to run for president against Temer, but it doesn't seem to be that way. And I've got a story that I'll tell you in a little while that might explain why he wants to be in the Senate itself. When you look at Argentina, their corn and beans, you know, estimates dropped a million metric tons this week down there. But just because they've got such unpredictable rain coverages, the dry areas now are getting some rain. The wet areas are missing all the rain, and they don't know where they're at. They've got their beans 97% planted. Early beans are already flowering and setting pods. Still hard for me to to wrap my head around sometimes. Corn is 91% planted, and Unfortunately, with the weather forecast that they have at the moment, you could see a lot more damage done to the early and the late planted corn if it turns out to be the hotter and drier that they're expecting. When you look at, in general, they've just had a really rough year. There's no question about that.
So you mentioned Maggi. You have a story about them?
Oh, I do. The Maggi family company actually purchased the Intimorati Norte farm. Most of us wouldn't even be familiar with what that is, but Maggi, which is a company, this particular farm at one time was the largest soybean farm in the world. And they bought it from the Ulster de Moraes descendants. It's 105,000 hectares, 259,350 acres. And Amaji's actually been renting it since 2002. Now, this particular farm, I thought this was very interesting. It was a symbol of ag development in Mato Grosso. It's located in West Central, and the clearing of the land was really easy. They just used a tractor and a blade. It's mostly grass and kind of scrub brush in that native vegetation. And this is the Cerrado. And I've talked about the Cerrado numerous times. In fact, I did a presentation in Chicago right before we had the car accident, and talked about the fact that the Brazilian Cerrado has 32 million acres available in Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, Goiás, and Minas Gerais, and actually 203 million, or 24% of Brazil, is in Cerrado, and it's still available to clear. Now, the Cerrado basically is considered to be infertile land. It was always used as pasture land, and so many people thought that Ulster was just crazy for buying it. You know, the land was infertile, but he showed him that he was wrong, and he became the king of soybeans. He hired agronomists who helped develop the farm and the true potential of row crop production in West Central Brazil. So today, Mato Grosso is the largest producer of beans, corn, cotton, and cattle in Brazil. And they produce as many beans, which I thought everybody would find this interesting, as Iowa, Illinois, and half of Indiana combined.
That's
a big picture, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah. Yes. This farm is so big, and it was so isolated at the time when Ulster bought it, that it actually contained its own community. It had retail stores, it had a church, had a bank, had grain elevators, feed mills, electric generators, etc. But it's certainly not like that. You know, this was 30 years ago, and now the entire region is developed, and you know, it's really very productive in agriculture. Ulster bought that land for $1 an acre, and they sold it for $2,650 an acre. Can you imagine? I mean, he had to put, there's no doubt that he had to put money into this, you know, from that standpoint, but that's quite a return on your investment, you know?
Indeed it is. That's what soybeans have done for the Brazilian economy and agriculture there, I suppose.
Well, and, you know, if you put that in dollars, it's really quite amazing, because you know that was $259,350 if you paid $1 an acre, right? When he sold it was $687,277,500 an acre. Or, I mean, for the whole thing, $687 million. That's a little wow. That would buy a nice car, you know. And so, anyway, you have a great day. Thank you, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Jackie Vex is with Stuart Peterson. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. In today's agricultural news, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a ruling this week that the American Farm Bureau Federation fears could bring back, at least temporarily, the waters of the U.S. rule, otherwise known as WOTUS. Senate Judiciary Chair Chuck Grassley says the High Court ruling could soon reactivate WOTUS. AFBF issued a statement this week that sending WOTUS lawsuits back to federal district courts before the EPA has finalized a proposed delay or permanent repeal risk reviving the regulation. Grassley argues that's not going to happen.
Pretty simple. The administration said that they aren't going to enforce WOTUS.
And the senator claims that's the case even before a new rule is finalized.
They're going through the process of repealing it. But, you know, they have to go through the same process of justifying repealed the same way that the previous administration had to go through the process of justifying that it needed to be a rule.
Farm Bureau, meantime, says it's considering its options to avoid application of the 2015 rule while EPA moves forward with a long-term solution that does not require a federal permit for plowing and other routine practices. A new TPP trade agreement is set to be signed in March, just as the Trans-Pacific Partnership nations seemed ready to leave Canada behind. The nations have reached an agreement to sign the pact, renamed the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. The agreement comes after talks in Japan this week, according to the CBC News of Canada. With Canada now on board with approval of its agriculture sector, the TPP-11 agreement is scheduled for a ceremony signing in March. A senior Canadian official also says the deal opens Canada's beef exports to Japan at the expense of producers in the United States. The U.S.-based National Cattlemen's Beef Association says the United States' withdrawal from TPP is a missed opportunity. Let's stay with trade agreements. A new report by the Business Roundtable suggests that ending the NAFTA, or North American Free Trade Agreement, would result in job losses of more than $1.8 billion in the United States. As negotiators are meeting again in Canada this week, the report was released to urge the administration to take into account the potential damage of withdrawing from the trade agreement. Drafting two scenarios, the report considers potential tariff increases by the U.S. on Canada and Mexico, and increases in duties on most favored nation rates, while considering no change in trade between the two countries, three countries rather. The report finds that most of the job losses would affect workers holding lower skilled occupations, including production workers in manufacturing and agriculture, and lower wage workers in the service industries. And finally today, a recent report by CoBank expects the farm economy to tighten again in 2018, and experts say that will lead to more farmers filing Chapter 12 bankruptcy. DTN, the Progressive Farmer, reports that wheat and dairy producers are among the hardest hit, with an increase in Chapter 12 bankruptcy filings in Kansas and Wisconsin reaching the highest level since 2012. The number of Chapter 12 filings has been on the rise since 2014, when there were about 380 filings. That number spiked to just more than 500 last year. Chapter 12 is designed specifically for farmers with regular annual income and allows them to stop debt collection and establish repayment plans of 3 to 5 years with creditors. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's turn our attention to what's happened in the cash grain market. Pete Peterson is here now from the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. We've had some movement in the marketplace in Chicago, at least. How's basis holding up in your area?
Been pretty firm. Grain is starting to move, and just because of conducive to the weather and kind of combination of just obligations trying to get filled and or a little bit maybe cash flow needs. So things have been pretty firm at this point.
Yeah, firm, but are you how far under?
We're at climbers right now. We're actually at zero basis versus the March. Delphi, the rail market, we're at 5 under the March.
And for soybeans in the area?
Soybeans, we're at 25 under the March at Delphi.
And so what is it that keeps your soybean basis so strong? I know for climbers, it's the ethanol plant, and you're really trying to draw there, and your basis has been strong for several years. Is there a processor nearby for oil, bean oil or meal, that really keeps things humping?
Yeah, we're kind of in the middle of kind of three different processors in the area here. But that is one of the things we look at. But also, we are a rail bid. So our rail markets dictate more or less. We come over Fort Wayne, and those markets dictate our cash bids and more than anything basis.
Do you expect basis to widen or stay firm?
It's all indicative of movement of grain or at this point in time. The processors are still sticking their neck out a little bit to originate some beans, and I think the rail market will do the same, especially with the weather, improving. I think it might get a little bit weaker, but right now they're still not, they're not had the appetite fulfilled yet.
Hey, Pete, thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you.
That is Pete Peterson. He is with the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. You're listening to the Closing Market Report for this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us. Let's start today in South America. There are conflicting reports about Argentina and where it stands, whether they are going to get enough rain, whether they're in dry conditions. What have you seen over the last week, and what do you forecast for the next 10 days or so?
Well, certainly Argentina has been all over the board this season, and it's one of those years when, drought moves around from one part of the country to the other, and when it's not too dry, it's getting too much rain in a few spots. That's the case up in the north right now. Earlier this growing season, across northern Argentina, we went probably a good 6 weeks without a lot of meaningful rainfall, and it was really dry. Top and subsoil moisture were running very short for multiple weeks, and it was just a bad environment. Well, now it's raining across those areas on a regular basis. In fact, it's probably going to rain too much in the coming week across some of those areas. So either way you look at it, either it was too dry or now it's too wet, so the crops aren't going to do all that well in northern Argentina. In the heart of the production area for corn and soybeans and peanuts and sorghum, there has also been a lot of variety. The province of Cordoba, which is really one of the more important provinces, has had really mostly well-timed precipitation this year. It's been too dry at times and got a little moist, but for the most part, I think they've had good subsoil moisture and the crops should be doing relatively well there. Now, for the rest of the production area, the situation varies greatly. You know, if it was in the States, we would talk about, a group of counties here and a group of counties there that were too dry with areas in between getting timely rains. And I think that's really what's been happening in Argentina. So there is a lot of variety from one field to another, and we are going to see a wide range of yields coming out of the key production areas. The next 7 to 10 days are going to get very dry. We have one rain event coming up here that I believe that will occur on Thursday night into Saturday, and then after that we'll go a full week without rain and a ridge of high pressure will build up, so it'll get very warm. So we are going to stress more crops in parts of Argentina, and they will come up a little shorthanded, but it's not quite the disaster that some folks want to make it.
Now turn your attention to Brazil for me. They've had a pretty good growing season, though it's been delayed.
Absolutely, and this is quite reflective in the vegetative index. You can see the satellite interpretation of crop conditions in Brazil are actually better than they were last year at this time. And the crop is reflecting that. The surface, the folks that have harvested some of the early beans have certainly confirmed that the yields are better than expected. So, we are definitely late in getting some of the crop out of there, but what we do have is very good. And as long as we can get the crop out quickly now in the next few weeks and get that corn crop in, then everything's going to be fine. But there is a little concern about the rainfall over the next 2 weeks might end up being a little bit too frequent, and there will be some new planting and harvest delays there, and that's probably going to catch the marketplace for a while, at least their attention for it.
Anything here in the United States?
Well, we're getting ready for another round of very cold air coming in later in February. Probably the end of the first week, into the second week, we'll see some more cold air across a big part of North America. We're going to lose most of the snow before we get to that point, so we're going to be watching this pretty closely to see if we're going to run into any more winter kill. But until that happens, I think for right now, it's going to be a real pleasant 7 days coming up.
Other concerns about wheat in the northern hemisphere?
Outside of North America, no. I think the answer is just simply no. There have been no bouts of serious cold in China or Asia. Or in Europe, but in North America, I'm sure we've got damage in Canada, up across parts of Saskatchewan. I know we had some damage probably in South Dakota and Kansas, Oklahoma, and the Texas Panhandle. So when we get to spring, it's going to be interesting to see what the assessments end up saying. If we can get some rain to fall this spring, whatever crop has been damaged, we'll have a chance to set some new tillers, as long as, of course, it didn't just actually die. The crop that is lost, we'll be able to see as soon as we start greening that crop up here soon.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You too. That, of course, is Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated.